Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do.
Hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Paula Quincence, and she is a relationship coach and also a life coach, a life coach and relationship coach. What I think it is. Welcome, Paula.
Thanks, Tanya. It's so great to be here, and thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And it's really, really interesting times now. I know this will probably air as we go into next year, but we're actually recording this during the second time of the lockdown. So when it comes out, it'll be interesting to see what is happening in the world in the future. But I know that you're in lockdown and you're calling from South Africa. So what's it like in South Africa now?
Well, we're on level one at the moment, so we have a lot more freedom compared to you over there because you've just gone back into lockdown. We still have quite a lot of freedom. We can move about and we still are able to go to restaurants and places like that. Obviously restricted gatherings in terms of numbers and stuff. But they are talking about the second wave obviously coming down south. So who knows where we'll be in 2 to 3 months' time. We might be in your position.
Gosh, you know, it's so uncertain times, isn't it, right now? But as you kind of reflect, I'm going to get this question out straight away. As you reflect and you look at like the first lockdown that we had in April 2020, as you're reflecting now, because we know we're moving forward now, coming towards the end of the year, what was good for lockdown for you and what was not so good?
I think if anything, it's taught us the difference between what's valuable and what's important. Brilliant. So important being, it's taught us to appreciate things like freedom of movement, friendships, relationships, family, being able to, you know, just that social connection, that human connection, which I think a lot of us took for granted because we got caught up in the daily grind of life. Whereas it's taught us to really reflect on what's those valuable things. So like material things, we've learned that we can do without so much stuff and we can get by with so much less than what we thought we needed or couldn't live without, so to speak.
And how has that reflected with regards to your relationship coaching and lifestyle coaching during that time?
I think, you know, there's two camps here. There are those couples that had a very strong relationship and foundation to begin with. And even though they may have, I call them speed bumps, even though they may have had a speed bump or a wobble in their relationship, their foundation was strong enough that they were able to work through it. They could make it work by really sitting down, and because now they were forced to be in each other's spaces, you couldn't escape by going to work like many people do, you know. You couldn't put the distance between you that you would potentially, and the risk of that is leaving issues unresolved. So couples were in each other's faces and they had to sit down and they had to talk it out and resolve it and find a way forward or find a middle ground, as opposed to the opposite side of the camp, which is those people that had a really wobbly foundation found themselves in a place that was potentially unsafe emotionally or even toxic. I mean, we've obviously seen the stats, the global stats around GBV, gender-based violence and domestic abuse, but we've also seen the divorce stats spike as well globally. First of all, started in China because they were the first ones to come out of lockdown. Mm. And then it's kind of the trend has followed different countries around the world, including here in South Africa. Mm. And couples just that they just didn't have a strong base to work from. They weren't able to sort out their issues. It became ugly or toxic, or they just, you know what, I can't handle being in this person's space anymore and I want out. Yeah. And it's just put a spotlight on what wasn't working.
God, you know what? That's exactly, that's what it is, a spotlight. And I suppose as you as a relationship coach, that must have been really, really interesting, because when you put a spotlight on what's not working, it goes a little bit deeper, doesn't it, in terms of you looking at yourself, at self-reflection point, because sometimes when something's not working, sometimes it's because we're not looking at ourselves. That's what I find anyway. It's a deep, because it always starts with self, doesn't it, with healing. And from my perspective as a therapist too, it starts with the inner healing first, and then what we're projecting out to others, how others are receiving us. And the people closest to us, sometimes we can project negative stuff and we don't even realize it. But once you realize it, it's like a revelation of, okay, maybe I need to change this behavior or change the way I look at things. How do people cope with that in terms of being able to change those behaviors? Do you find people are open to this self-reflection, or is there a struggle sometimes when you're working with people on that level?
I think it definitely depends on your level of self-awareness and emotional maturity. If you don't have some of that in place, it can be very difficult and challenging, because we're very quick to point fingers at our partners and blame our partners for what they are not doing in our relationship. We very seldom look at them and appreciate and acknowledge what they are doing on what is right in our relationship. Part of it is obviously the human psyche, the way we're wired and conditioned, which is to look at the negatives. And so when things aren't working in our relationship, it's a threat to us. It makes us feel emotionally unsafe. So it's a danger. So we react and we respond to that in the whole fight, flee, freeze, behavior. Mm. Whereas if I'm able to take a step back and look at me and go, but how am I showing up and how am I co-creating my relational space? So the space between two people, because that's where your relationship lives. Mm. And we're equally accountable and responsible for co-creating the us, the we, and the ours, which is a relationship.
Yes.
And so a conscious adult mature relationship, as I like to call it, is where I can own my stuff. I can own my contribution and say, yes, this is what I'm doing and this is what I can improve on to be a better partner and to create a better, healthier relationship.
No, totally. And I think that's what's so important, is starting from that point. But coming to your story, Paula, I know, because it's quite interesting. I always find when people are therapists or people are coaches, there's always a story there. There's always, because you don't just, I don't think it's a career that you just wake up as a young kid and say, yeah, I'm going to be a coach. I think it's normally a journey, isn't it, in terms of what you've been through or what you've experienced. So from your experience, why did you get into coaching, and what was your negative experience that got you to a positive experience, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all have a story to share and tell, and I guess that's part of the value that we add and contribute to this world, our little sparkle of magic. So mine started, my life-defining moment is, for what I can remember, it started at age 7. I don't remember much before that, and that's because my mom died when I was 7 years old. I was originally born in Rhodesia, or what is now called Zimbabwe. Back then, Rhodesia was in civil war, or fighting for independence. Mm-hmm. And my mom happened to be on one of those Viscount airplanes that were shot down by terrorists back then. Oh. And so, yeah, and at such a young age, to have one of your primary caretakers taken away from you, which moms provide a lot of the nurturing on an emotional level, when it comes to children and developing that emotional foundation. So that foundation was already rocked, or knocked off its feet, so to speak, from that age. And then shortly thereafter, we left Rhodesia, moved to South Africa. And I then from age 8, 9, because I don't remember the exact dates, experienced a sexual abuse as a child for about 5 years. Wow. And that was the sort of the next step in the story that shaped and influenced who I became as an adult. On top of that, my dad might as well have died at the same time as my mom, because he was emotionally unavailable. He just wasn't there for us. And partly a generational thing. He came from that generation where the man was the provider, the breadwinner. He went out, put a roof over your head and food on your table, and it was kind of the woman's job to raise the children. You know, he came from that generation. So he was there functionally. He wasn't there emotionally. So we didn't have an emotional connection growing up. And so I didn't grow up developing those skills on what emotional connection was about, what emotional safety or healthy connection was about. I didn't develop those skills. So when I got into having my adult relationships, I didn't know how to create healthy attachment because I'd never had it. I never experienced it. And so I had a string of failed relationships until there was a 6.5-year relationship. We had hit rock bottom. We were going for therapy. Our therapist referred us to Imago relationship therapy. And it was there that it just had such a profound impact on me, understanding who I had become and how I was co-creating my relationship space. I wasn't showing up and co-creating healthy attachment and emotional connection and love and care and nurturing in my relationship. And I was so busy blaming my partner for what had gone wrong because he had had an affair, until I had to look in the mirror and go, what's my stuff?
Yeah.
And that's really how it started and how I got into the work that I'm doing. And that was back in 2006. So I've been doing this since 2009, initially in a part-time capacity because I was still working in the corporate world. And in 2014, an opportunity came up to leave corporate and pursue this as my next career, or the next step in my journey. It was in my newfound passion. I'd lost passion for what I was doing in the corporate space. And that's how I got to where I am today and doing the work that I do, and why I'm so passionate about healthy relationships at home and in the workplace as well.
Gosh, you know what? As you're talking, I'm just breathing and taking that in, because it's so much to take in. And what I'm kind of feeling as well from another space is how strong you are. And, you know, you clearly are the best person to go to for this relationship. Because so, I always feel it's almost like, because I've done some work with young offenders, it's always like somebody who's been an offender that goes through that process and then goes through like that awakening and that enlightenment process, and then comes and helps and wants to help the young offenders. They're always the best people because they've been through it. And I suppose with regards to relationships, when you understand from a deep level that you've got to come and look at yourself and reach into what's going on with you, rather than kind of looking at external, because that's what we tend to do, don't we, as human beings, tend to look at external and blame external. And also having to lose your mum at such a young age, I think that's very difficult, because I think it's hard. It's very hard. There's a lot of people that have not had their fathers in their life. That's more common, isn't it? But when your mum leaves you, you're right, she is the prime nurturer. And that's the person that teaches you on a soul level, love. But then love is something that I think a lot of people don't realise. Love is something that in some ways is taught. I always say that to people, because people say, oh, does that person love me? Or what about love? But love is just like every other behaviour, is a taught behaviour. So the way you love someone is about how you've been taught to love. And then to learn to love on another level or in a depth level will be about someone else teaching you, or you watching and actually becoming that. So there's so many different levels there, isn't there? So I want to ask you on that love level, having to go through everything you did with mum not being around, then through the counselling. When was that point that you realised, my God, I'm understanding how to love?
Yeah, it was quite a long journey in terms of obviously therapy and working through and processing stuff and realising that my past doesn't get to define who I am, I do.
Yes.
And I also had to let go of, and sometimes I still relapse to that because it's default behavior, right? But I had to learn to let go of relying and depending on others. I had learned to become so self-sufficient, and I was so independent in my relationships that I didn't need anybody to be there for me. And so I had built these walls up around me, and I never let, particularly when it came to romantic relationships, I never let people in. because I didn't want to be let down and disappointed yet again, because that's what it had felt like throughout my entire life, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I had to learn to become vulnerable. I had to learn to open myself up and start talking about these things to let people in behind the walls. Yeah. And see the real me, the whole of me, not just this strong, independent woman that I was showing off to the world, you know, because I am that, yeah. But I'm also all the other bits too.
No, totally, of course, yeah. No, that's really, really, really interesting. And thank you for being so open about this. I think this is, it just gives me so much to give you as well, do you know, and to give other people when we talk openly about this thing called love, you know, because it is interpreted in so many different ways, and it is a process, as you say, as you're going through, and learning to be that strong woman, have that resilience, but also learning to open yourself up, as you said, and be vulnerable, and be nurturing, and so forth and so forth. So, you know what? What was the most kind of enlightenment moment for you? What's the moment where you really felt like, hey, I'm on top of the world now, just looking back in your life? Was there a moment where you felt, God, I'm on my path now, I'm on top of the world, and I'm feeling like I'm on the right track?
I think definitely as I was doing more and more relationship work, first of all, obviously from a professional training point of view, but then my own self-growth and development and in my own relationship, I'm very blessed to be in an awesome relationship now. Mm. But, you know, it was, and also working with couples and seeing their shifts, and, you know, through working with them. And I think every time there was a shift or an aha moment or an amazing, wonderful, positive experience, I reclaimed a little bit of my lost parts. Mm. And I've also learned a lot around having to, you know, self-care and self-love and learning to love yourself and accept yourself first. It doesn't mean that there aren't on those days where I do, you know, that imposter syndrome comes to visit and I doubt myself and I question myself. Mm. But I have to keep also reminding myself that, you know, we all have a purpose, and if I feel that this is my purpose by sharing my story and letting others in, I'm helping them in the process while at the same time I'm helping myself.
Gosh, you know, that's so true. I obviously, that's why I do real stories, but but you know, sharing your story, I think that is so important. And yeah, you mentioned there a kind of like self-care, self-love, and I hate this word selfish, but I'm going to use it because I feel that's so important, to in some ways to be selfish in terms of getting to know you first and taking time out to understand you. Understanding you is a long process, I do feel, but as long as you're on that journey, then you can really do your work that you do in terms of the therapy work, connect with other people and build those relationships. And kind of, it's probably easy for you to kind of see what's going on, but then you have to sit back sometimes, don't you? And allow them to work it out. Because otherwise when you're the therapist, you can work out, oh, I can see what's happening here. But you've got to allow them to find that within themselves. And that takes a lot of listening and also letting go of judgments as well. And letting go of, I think we're gonna go on this journey, but let's allow myself to explore and go on that journey. So how is, in terms of exploration, I'll give you this. I'm quite creative when it comes to exploration. And I know that I'm not the run of the mill type of person in terms of the way that I look at things. I think it works very much for my work. What within your toolbox do you have that helps you to go on that exploration to find what you need to find? So what's a Paula, what Paula Quintessence, kind of toolbox thing that is a you thing that's a unique to you?
Yeah, so you know, I think like most majority of therapists out there, we take those things that appeal to us and we put them in our toolbox and we create our own unique style. So I love Imago relationship therapy, particularly the dialogue process, understanding that, you know, the childhood conditioning and how it plays out in our adult relationships. So I often do that exercise. In fact, I probably do that exercise with every couple or every individual, just to get to that deeper level of self and what's contributed to shaping them. I've also, as an NLP practitioner or NLP neuro-linguistic programming, a lot of the reframing, the visualization, and playing with hypnotherapy or hypnotic processes. But I think the biggest thing for me that I really subscribe to as part of my core values and what I'm passionate about is creating a safe space and holding the space for others, and sitting with them in that space, and so that they really feel that I'm there with them in the journey. And that's often feedback that I get is, you know, that it's like you're right there every step of the way, and it feels safe, and to have a lot of compassion, because being there, done that, I've experienced the hurt, the pain, and maybe not exactly the same, but versions and variations of it. And I think that gives me a lot of insights in terms of how to be there for others. And then I'm more of a around personal growth and development. So looking at steps around things like understanding values and how they contribute to our decisions and our actions and our behaviors. And I've used a lot of steps from my own personal journey. I used to be a competitive athlete, a long distance runner. And I've done number of marathons and ultra distances and stuff. And part of what I've learned through my own coaching journey with I had a running coach. In fact, I still have him. He's still around. And you know, the coaching methods in terms of, you know, setting a vision or a goal, putting a training program in place or putting an action plan in process, and then what are the steps that you need to take and how do you tweak and reflect and get feedback along the way. So I've applied a lot of things I've learned from my running career, so to speak, in the work that I do as well.
You know what, that makes so much sense as well, because when you are kind of that competitive runner, also it's a way of healing as well. I always feel when you've got something or that you do, whether it is, you know, creatively or being a sports person, that kind of, there's so much learning in that and there's so much healing in that. Because I even know myself, especially just recently, running every day with my kids during lockdown kept me sane. And I did the marathon, I think it's 2002, it's a long time ago, and I'm so far from that now in terms of what you do. But it was so nice just to kind of go on that process and to clear my mind every morning. I kind of felt like, okay, I can work now. Once we've done our run in the morning and we get up really early, really, then now I can work. And it's so funny because when we didn't do it, or the days you didn't do the run in the week, I kind of felt more lethargic and more tired. And it's so interesting how that can impact your day, you know? So I want to know, because, you know, from an athlete, how does that kind of work with regards to the therapy? So what, just give us three things that really helps with your kind of background as an athlete, running and therapy. Give us three things that you've taken from being an athlete that you adopt into your therapy, just three.
I think, you know, resilience, and you know, there's going to be bad patches or tough patches. So in the running terminology, it's called hitting the wall. There are going to be days when you're going to hit the wall, and that resilience to keep going and push through those bad patches. I think, you know, the determination to reach the finish line, so to keep going. And I think definitely that sense of achievement, that once you've reached that finish line, what it feels like to push through and get to the other side and achieve a goal that you've set for yourself. I think those are definitely, I think three things that I can take away with me and that I try and bring across in the work that I do. So when I help couples set a vision, it's like, that's the end goal. That's the finish line. That's what we're working towards. And then how do we take the steps backwards? And, you know, making them aware up front that it's not going to be an easy process or journey. There's going to be days where they're going to feel like they're taking 10 steps backwards, and that's okay, because that's life. We go through bad patches. But how do you encourage and motivate each other and be each other's cheerleaders to keep going, even on those tough days?
Yeah. You know, that's so interesting, even thinking to myself, because I've, you know, I do therapy, but I've also been through therapy myself, which is another reason why I chose to go down that route. But when you are going through therapy, there is always a trigger moment as you are the client where you're thinking, I remember going through a moment thinking, wow, just leave me alone. Or you feel like you're being hit at, or you feel like you're resistant. And then you've got to work through that moment. And sometimes it can be a point where you just want to give up and say, you know what, either you're not the therapist for me, or we're going to work through that. How do you handle that? Because you must have had some interesting clients. Have you ever had a client like that that may swear or just may lose it with you and just say, I don't want this anymore? How do you then cope with that to take the next step?
Yeah, look, I don't think there's much that I haven't heard that could shock me these days. I think I've heard it all. you know, and I'd say to people when they come to see me, whether it's on their own or with their partner, that this is their space and for them to be able to express themselves in whatever way that they need to, provided there's still a basic level of respect. So that's important. And to use it as an opportunity to learn and grow from each other. But more importantly, as therapists, you know, we can't make that decision for people. They've got to get to that point. So when they initially come and see me for the first diagnosis and I've heard, you know, where they're at and what's going on for them, I'll put the options on the table and I'll go, right, these are your options. You can walk down this road and we can work at it together and we can come out on the other side, but there's no guarantees either, because you could be walking halfway down and realize, actually, this isn't what I want anymore.
Yes.
And that's okay. It's a choice. Mm. But you won't know until you start going down that path, because there's so many unknown factors. Or you could go, you know what, right now I've decided, like, I'm over it. I've got nothing left in me to actually want to try, and I want to walk away from this. So how do we walk away that there is closure on both sides, especially if there's children involved? Because whether you like it or not, you are still going to be part of each other's lives for the rest of your life as long as your children are around.
Exactly, yeah.
And so to try and put some kind of healthy co-parenting plan in place that has the kids' best interests in heart, because they're the innocent victims here.
Yes.
You're the adults, and you need to behave like adults.
Mm. No, totally. And I think that's so hard for couples, but it is lovely when you get to that point that you can have an amicable relationship with your partner if you leave them. And you can continue to work with them. And I think when you both realise that about the children, well, it is all about the kids at the end of the day. So you've got to just push your stuff aside, which is a hard process to do. But once you're there, you can really have sometimes a better relationship being apart, can't you, rather than being together, which I feel...
Definitely. I mean, you know, and I think a lot of what sometimes stops couples from going down that road is that they feel like a failure. You know, when their marriage hasn't worked out, depending on their upbringing, if they've grown up in a very conservative or religious background, you know, marriage is meant to be till death do us part. And if their marriage isn't working and they're getting divorced, maybe it's a taboo thing in their family or their culture or their tradition, so they feel like a failure. They also, sometimes there's a stigma of being divorced. And they just, they can't cope with that stigma. It almost feels like it's a jail sentence.
Yeah.
And then also around, you know, some people have this thing about, you know, maybe because they grew up in homes, divorced homes, they don't want their children to grow up without a father or a mother. And to realize that, you know, they don't have to recreate what happened in their childhood. They can have a healthy co-parenting plan that's different to what they potentially grew up in. And I think once we sit and discuss all those things and they realize, actually, you know what, it's not as bad as I'm maybe thinking or making it out to be. And there is a bit of glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel. We can then start working through those things and whichever option they want to go down.
You know what, that's such a good point you made there, because it is so much about your childhood experience as to what you want. And sometimes you can have that fairy tale idea of what you want in a relationship because of what you didn't have as a child or what you did have, you know, and that sometimes can hold you in a relationship where you're in a relationship, but actually the relationship's unhealthy because you're staying there because of what you think you have to experience. And then the children are watching that and they can see that you're unhappy, see that you're not, you know, and that's what's really hard, isn't it, really, sometimes to go through that or to change how you look at things. God, there's so much there, isn't there? So much. I could speak to you about this all day because it's one of my favorite subjects. We talk about the whole way we are as human beings and how we connect and how we kind of embody everything about ourselves and how then that reflects out to everybody else around us and how we impact other people. Because I feel like it's a constant journey. I hate when people say to me, I'm gonna fix you, or we're gonna deal with this. Because at the end of the day, there's no fixing or dealing, isn't it? It's a process of every single time. There's always gonna be something that comes up in life. Mm-hmm. But as long as you understand, I feel, how to cope with your triggers, because we all triggered. I love the word trigger. I love it when I'm triggered, because when you're aware that you're triggered, for me, that's exciting. It's like, oh, I'm triggered. Because then you can, when you're aware about it from a therapist perspective, it's like, yes, this, I can feel the fire in my belly and I know what to do. Do you know? It's like, okay, there's something going on with me. I might be angry, or I might feel triggered about something, what someone says. I know that I need to revisit. I know to do that reflection. Where's that trigger coming from? And a lot of people are scared of going to that point of being triggered, but that's where the self-development comes, isn't it? In terms of, okay, now I can really find out where that's coming from and where I need to go next. Yeah. So I love all that idea. So just kind of as we're rounding it off, I'm a lover of Carl Jung. And as you do your work, and obviously you've got the NLP, who really inspires you in this work as regards to therapy? Got psychotherapy, who is kind of one of the people you really look at and think, I really like this method?
Yeah, gosh, the list is long, but if I would just off the top of my head, definitely Harville Hendricks and his wife Helen, because they co-founded Imago Therapy. Obviously Esther Perel from a sensuality perspective, which is part and parcel of a relationship. Brené Brown with the art of vulnerability and courage, because you need that in a relationship. Exactly. So I'd say those are probably the top three off my head. That and of course my one and only guru is Tony Robbins. I love his work.
Oh yeah,
well.
Okay, Tony Robbins. He's funny, isn't he? I find him hilarious when I watch him. I think his whole work and his way of working is quite. I think he can be quite forceful. It's quite, you know, really about everything. But he does get results. He does get, I can't take that away from him. He does get results. That's interesting. So what's the thing?
I think it's more about the results that he gets. There's some of his ways, which I'm like, I'm not sure if I would do it. But then that's probably because I'm probably more of a more conservative type coach than I guess what he is. He, as you say, he's very like bold and aggressive almost and out there. But maybe that's why he gets the results he does, because that's his style. We all have our own style of doing things.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting enough, as I just said about triggers, he does that, doesn't he? He goes for the trigger. You know, when you watch it, that's what I love. He goes for the trigger. Sometimes you watch some of his stuff on YouTube, can't you? And then the tears come. But then that's where sometimes you've got to go to that point. People are afraid of that point, aren't they? And as I said, that's why the triggers are important. But it's what comes out from the trigger. Do you mean that's that for me? It's like, yes, I'm here, I feel it. And then when you recognise it, okay, this is what I need to address. This is where I need to go. And I suppose you could take 6 weeks to get to that point. He does it in one session.
Exactly.
It's really interesting, isn't it? It's really interesting. But like you say, it just depends. Not for everybody, is it? And that's about archetypes, because we're all different archetypes. And as you know, with the NLP, we're all different, and we're all going to receive things in a different way as well, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and I think you'll also gravitate to the style that resonates with you the best or the most, you know.
Mm-hmm. And if someone has no clue, so someone's listening to right now and they've maybe never seen a therapist or has no clue, what would you advise them to do whilst they're looking in terms of finding that style?
I think, you know, first of all, be clear on what kind of coach or therapist are you looking for. And so is there, let's say, for example, it's relationships. And obviously, you know that you're looking for a relationship coach or a relationship therapist or someone that works with couples and relationship therapy or marriage therapy. Mm. And then to obviously do a bit of Google research on them and see in terms of, you know, any reviews that they've had of people that they've worked with or testimonials or recommendations. If they do happen to have a social media presence, have a look at some of their videos or their posts to see if, you know, if it resonates with you, get a feel for them. And then if they offer some coaches and therapists offer a free sort of introductory session, a connection call is sometimes what it's called, just to see if there's a fit for you. And most importantly, also referrals. Ask people if they know of anybody, because generally we go on people's advice and recommendations and just sort of taking someone out of the blue.
Yes, totally, totally, totally. I think that's always the best. I'm a bit of a lover of, you know, word of mouth. I always feel like if someone's tried something and it's worked for them and you trust that person, that's always the best. It's so funny, people do all of this marketing, but it always comes back to that in the end, especially when it comes to therapy. I think it's such a gentle thing that you've got to feel like drawn to that person's personality. So that's why for me the hard sell doesn't always work. It's just good to connect and hear people's stories, see if you connect. Because sometimes it could be someone listening saying, God, you know, I've been through that, or I lost my mum quite young and I understand that. I'd like to work with you because of that, an understanding of what they've been through. So they're already drawn to you because of that. So I think that's really, really, really key, or really, really important. Well, thank you very much for coming on my show today. So just as some wise words, Paula, what would you, in terms of a quote or maybe just some wise words from you, what would you like to leave my audience with?
So, you know, I'm a quotes person. I love quotes and that, but the one or the two that kind of resonate with me is the treasure that we seek is in the cave we fear to enter.
I love that. The treasure that we seek is in the cave that we fear to enter. And I think it's so fitting with what we've discussed today, in terms of those fears sometimes to go to those places. But once we go there, that's where we kind of explore. It's a bit like Aladdin, isn't it, really? You know, he has to go into that cave of treasure for his whole journey to begin of life, you know. That's why I love fairy tales. There's always some underlining truth, isn't there, with fairy tales and musicals. So it's quite interesting. Well, thank you very much. So from Tanya the Communication Doctor and Paula, I'd just like to say adios. Takeaways from this show is, when we're looking at this relationship with different people, whether it is your romantic relationship, whether it's your working relationship, we need to not just look at the external but also look at the internal, and to look deep inside ourselves. And Paula says a great thing. She said she had to look into the mirror and say, what is my stuff? What's going on with me, for her to develop her own personal development? And I feel that's what it is. That's the beauty of therapy, being able to look within and address how to love or address how to connect. Because every behaviour, everything that we do is generally modelled to us by our parents, by our colleagues. So we have to look inside ourselves and say, what are we going to model to the world? So I just want to say, I really enjoyed this session. I feel it's a real learning session in terms of healing and in terms of personal self-development. So thank you for listening. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. To listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.